Chapter 19. I expect Larson to show us to the luxury accommodations we've all seen on the commercials and introduce us to our team leaders. The show will mimic a high-tech astronaut training program. But Ted and the other production managers instead herd the crowd out, shut the gate, and lead us through a maze of studio alleys to a tarmac? The camera crew is boarding an airplane, or something airplane-ish, right there in the middle of a TV lot. It's a large lot, the kind you could shoot huge action sequences in, but certainly not one long enough to use as a runway. Then again, this isn't an ordinary airplane. It looks like one giant wing, with a circular central area for the crew and four massive engines. Like nothing I've ever seen. Some mix of jet and rocket engines hanging from the wings in the rear, each now rotating back and forth independently in what looks like a testing pattern. Wow, Ace Space really pulled out all the stops. A giant battleship gray military aircraft with "You're Going to Mars" splashed in purple across the front. I wonder if they'll offer us champagne on board. I've never tasted champagne. Our group of 26 marches down the carpet. Yes, the classic red carpet from every celebrity runway ever, led by Zach Larson, cameras rolling, all of us in awe. A woman, pudgy to the point of stretching the fabric of her spacesuit, scratches her head.
Wait, are we going to Mars first?
The rest of us laugh, and the contestant next to her puts his hand on her shoulder. Don't strain yourself, Claire. No, it's an X-93, vertical takeoff, prototype, first one I've ever seen. They're probably taking us out to the desert to see the Mars launch pad. It's amazing how quickly perceptions are molded. From that first moment, I brand the woman Claire out to lunch, and the man next to her, know-it-all. And looking around, I know it's wrong, but it's hard not to judge each of these books immediately by their covers. Athlete, stuck-up celebrity, actually normal, potential serial killer, friendly, cowboy swagger, that actor from Hometime, housewife, etc. And of course, Brat Diva, my hopefully very temporary companion, Aurora, America Sings runner-up. And now that I've met her, also fall over drunk. I wonder what the others have branded me. Larson walks over to Know-It-All and shakes his hand. Very good guess, Albert. But the X-93 is a government plane. Therefore, it won't exist for another decade or two. If ever. This, he runs up to the craft and bows proudly next to the staircase, is a little something Ace Space cooked up. As they say, if you want something done. And I can't help molding my instant impression of Zach Larson either. I like him. I thought that I'd have the opposite reaction on meeting this larger-than-life icon and media titan. That his disdain for rules, annoying quirks, way too self-assured attitude, and oh-so-over-the-top wealth would scrape like nails on a chalkboard. But there is something about him. The twinkle in his eye of a young man, a boy, really, in the body of a 60-year-old. Larson greets each of the contestants as they step onto the stairs, and Marina Della Costa, celebrity for no other reason than her father owns half of Italy, and who, by the way, probably paid 2 million credits for her scarab, gives him a kiss on the cheek.
You are coming, Zach, yes?
No, my dear, I don't even know if this beast can fly.
Marina gulps, and Larson kisses her cheek in return.
Have no fear, I've been on her several times, Marina. She's a dream, like a mouthful of cotton candy. You're in for a treat. Your team leaders and I will be here when you get back.
He grins. If you get back. Marina laughs nervously and climbs aboard. As I push Aurora toward the stairs, she and I being last, Larson stops us.
Well, well, I see you two are fast friends.
I roll my eyes before I can stop myself, then blush. A plastic disc appears from somewhere in Larson's suit.
It's called a 45 music record. My mother worked at a museum and used to sneak me in to play them all the time. I make my own now. This one's Baby's Gone, Aurora, dear. Would you sign my copy?
He holds out the disc and a marker, and I literally have to guide Aurora's hand to the small center area of the disc and help her scribble her autograph. He just happens to have a copy of Baby's Gone in his pocket. I add Enigma to my mental description of Zach Larson. Aurora stumbles up the stairs, and as I follow, Larson stops me.
Thank you,
Robin.
Yes, Robin, of course. Sometimes it takes a while for a name to stick.
He looks down at my hand.
What happened here?
I fell. I'm an idiot.
Let me have a look.
And he takes my hand, gently unwrapping Voom Voom's makeshift bandage.
Nasty scrape. Let's see if I've got something here.
He reaches into several more pockets of his magic suit and, sure enough, pulls out what looks like a wizard's wand.
It's not what you think. You may have seen this on Emergency Medic Alert, but I've had my team miniaturize a medbay wand into something pocket size.
He slowly passes the wand over my hand, and I feel a strange tingle, some mix of burning and cooling, then warmth, like a cup of hot cocoa with marshmallows. I've actually never had a cup of hot cocoa with marshmallows, but from the reactions of the people in the commercials, I imagine this is what they're feeling. It's nice. He takes out a little towelette from yet another pocket and wipes my palm clean.
See? Good as new.
It's like a miracle. I've seen it on TV, of course, but the Phil cities don't have medical tech like this, so it never seemed real. It's a shame. Miracles like this could do a lot of people a lot of good in the Phil cities. Larson leans in and whispers,
Now, tell me, Robin, do you like rockets?
What a strange question. If he knew me, he'd know I'm obsessed with rockets and space travel. But he couldn't possibly have known. Yes, he's definitely an enigma. Good guess, Mr. Larson. As a matter of fact, I do.
Zach, please. From now on, call me Zach. Well then, Robin, if you like rockets, you're going to love Martha.
Martha? He pats the underside of the airplane-like thing. I named her after my late mother. She's fast and feisty, just like Mom. Then he motions for my satchel.
May I take that for you? I can put it in your room. There's an area for small effects that's private and off-camera. You won't be needing it for the flight.
I clutch it to my body, probably a little too fast. Is it okay if I keep it with me?
Certainly. Just make sure it's secured. You might, hit a wee little turbulence up there. Now off you go.
Mr. Larson, Zach, where are we going? He just smiles and walks back toward the studio, and I can hear him chuckle to himself.
I'll see you when you get back.
So I climb the stairs and board the plane-ish thing close to the rear and look around. We are not getting champagne. These are the barest bones accommodations possible, with a positively military vibe. One big gray circular open area with a bench around the entire perimeter, rows of lights and buttons and rails along the ceiling, a door to the cockpit up front, and a couple of doors at the back. That's it. It's very unlike what I've seen so far. The schmaltzy signs and lights, the sets on the commercials, the red carpet. I wonder if this is on purpose, or if someone in charge of budgets finally put their foot down and said, Enough, Mr. Larson. Ted greets us as the exit is sealed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard. Please pick a spot, any spot. I'll let you know when you need to buckle in. Enjoy the flight. An attendant will come by if you'd like water or a snack. You too, Aurora and...
He looks down at his tablet.
Robin, if you two could change into your spacesuits in that little room in the back, thank you.
Claire raises her hand.
Yes, ma'am.
Are we going to Mars?
Ted laughs and looked around.
One of you very definitely is going to Mars, but not for the moment. The spacesuits just help you look the part for TV. And you are, again,
Claire.
Ah, yes, Claire, of course.
He taps a note on his tablet.
Jerry, why don't we begin the interviews with Claire?
Jerry, one of the cameramen, ambles over and kneels in front of Claire as she and Ted begin. Aurora and I change, and as I come back from the little room, I notice we're already airborne. I didn't feel a thing. The engines are humming as if we're idling. Amazing. If the clouds weren't zooming past the windows, you'd swear you were still on the ground. Claire, it turns out, is a 23-year-old cashier from Ohio who nearly threw out the winning scarab until her dog Ringo ferreted it out of the trash. She works at Zippy Mart and plays Bo Tech in a league on Saturdays. And she wants to go to Mars because, what the heck, she's overweight and wants to get back in the shape she was in during high school. Seize the day, am I right, Ted? Albert is next to be interviewed, the one I branded know-it-all. And he doesn't disappoint. He's an electronics engineer, just 31 but racing up the corporate ladder, working for Oberon, building supercomputers. He times himself solving the New York Times crossword puzzle every morning. Speaking of time, I don't have time to get married, but hey, if Mars makes me more attractive to the ladies, bonus. He is vigorous and is offered to help the crew if anything goes wrong on the flight. I'm good with machines, you know? Ted and the crew smile and nod, as if to say, don't call us, we'll call you. Next is Mike Horner, the actor I recognized from Home Time. On the show, Mike played a young son of an international spy who had never revealed to his family his true identity until the last episode of the last season. The show was a smash, and that last episode broke records. I remember watching it in our tiny little living room, all crammed in, screaming and crying and cheering for Mike and his TV dad. Anyway, the show set him up for bigger roles and even movies. He won't reveal how he got his hands on his scarab, but is absolutely determined to land the lead in the currently 2 years out Star Wars 15, Jedi Once More. And he thinks a trip to Mars will be the ultimate audition. Robin Smith. I jerk back, surprised. I've prepared for this moment since they stuffed me into the armoire, making up my backstory and repeating it over and over and over until I knew it backwards. And I repeat it again in my head quickly. I am Robin Smith, owner of a small farm in rural New Jersey. A sustenance farm, really. Chickens and goats and little fields of corn and soybean and squash. So I don't need to leave the property much. I live alone and watch a lot of TV, and that's my connection to the world. The watching a lot of TV part is true, for better or worse. Of course, that's possibly the most boring backstory possible. It doesn't stand a chance if I'm going to win likes with the global audience. So I've kept another part of my real past life in the story. That in my free time, I build and program small rockets and develop methane and other gas, liquid and solid propellants. I guess I'm going for the reclusive hippie girl who secretly digs science angle. Is that even an angle? But none of that story comes out of my mouth. So, Robin, tell me a little about yourself. This'll be for what we call confessionals. Or if you do something interesting later in the season, it's something we can call back to, like a dream. Well, Ted smiles and nods. He puts his hand on mine. First time in front of a camera? I nod. Okay. He turns to Jerry and moves his finger across his throat, and the red light on Jerry's camera goes dark. We'll find out more about you later then, Robin. Right now, it's just you and me. Is it okay if I ask you yes or no questions?
Yes?
Good. You already answered one right, see? Easy. Now, are you excited to be here?
Yes, very. And nervous, obviously.
That's okay. And can you hold your breath for longer than 3 minutes? I raise an eyebrow. Sorry, these are just icebreakers. Don't think too much about your answers.
No.
Can you do more than 12 pull-ups?
Yes.
Have you ever been in an extremely stressful situation, say, a robbery or a car crash or running from a burning building or being confined and escaping?
Confined and escaping.
Definitely. Good. Do you have any mechanical programming or chemistry ability?
Yes, yes, and yes.
It's Ted's turn to raise an eyebrow. He continues to tap on his tablet, being careful not to show me. Okay, last question. Is there anything interesting about you that we don't already know? I blurt out, no. He pats my hand and turns to give Jerry the okay to move on, but I grab him by the collar and pull him close enough where I can whisper in his ear. Yes. He pulls back, enough to peer into my eyes, and I hope they say it all. That there is a forbidden past I can't tell him about, that I've just been chased through the streets of Los Angeles by a rogue toll monitor, been told a secret I can't believe, and that I'm supposed to be the one who goes to Mars. It's where I belong. He smiles awkwardly and whispers back as he untangles my vice grip fingers from his shirt. I think we have everything we need for the moment. Moving on. Okay, folks, please buckle your shoulder harnesses. It might get a little bumpy for a few minutes. We all watch out the large windows as the clouds drop away further and further below us. Suddenly, we're pressed downward in our seats with incredible force. Claire gasps, "What's happening? Ted? Ted? Why aren't you answering me, Ted?" Ted and the camera crew clip straps dangling from their vests and various gear onto steel bars running along the ceiling. "It's all right, Claire, relax. Just a few more moments." The force, strangely smooth but extremely strong, vanishes. Our bodies begin to lift off the benches, tugging at the shoulder harnesses. We're weightless. "Welcome to low Earth orbit, folks. Not really, we're only about 100 miles up, but we're close. You can unbuckle now." Low Earth orbit. One by one, contestants begin to release their bodies to the open space and vomit. The camera crew groans and laughs, knowing this is priceless footage for the show and exactly what Zach Larson wants. The towels and plastic sheathing over the cameras are no longer a mystery. I think somehow, with my really important destiny at stake, that I'll escape puking. So I unbuckle and let myself float, giddy, and immediately unload the contents of my stomach into the air. Whoops. Aurora laughs at me, unfazed by the nebula of partially digested food particles floating through the open compartment. She swats away a bit of my waste. So, who's throwing up on who? I must turn red or look like another round might come shooting out of my mouth because she turns me around and pushes me towards a window. This might help. Look. We grab the bars beneath the window nearest us and hold on and look out together. I immediately forget the flotsam in the cabin and the nausea and smile. Space. We're floating far enough above Earth to see the gentle curve of its horizon and the infinite stars beyond. Amazing. Beautiful. The indescribably blue Earth is below us, its atmosphere almost glowing, and the pitch-black void above dotted with more stars than can ever be counted. A tear escapes my eye and floats away. Aurora fogs up the window with her breath, slurring her speech. "If I don't remember any of this tomorrow, will you remind me how gorgeous it is?" I laugh and nod and look down at our planet, so peaceful and clean and truly awe-inspiring. North America moves past as we fall gracefully around the planet. "That's where I'm from." Aurora tries to follow my finger. "New York?" "No, New Jersey." "Wow, me too. What city?" My heart stops. What are the chances? The very first person I meet on the set of You're Going to Mars is from New Jersey? I thought I saw on America Sings you were from Las Vegas. She scrunches up her face. "That's the story, the Aurora story. And I do live in Vegas, but I've also lived in Florida and Washington, and we even lived a couple of years in Oceania 12. Been all over. Kind of sucky life, if I'm being perfectly honest. Anyway, I left New Jersey when I was 3, so I don't even know why I asked you which city. I don't remember a thing." She laughs. "Except my tricycle. I got a used tricycle when I was around 2. Maybe it was yours. Red? Of course. Well, then it was definitely mine. You still have it?" "Nah, it's deep in the fill by now." She hiccups. "Deep in the fill? You sound like one of those Fill City people. You're funny." Again, my heart stops. I need to get better at not being Paper Forest, third generation filler, immediately. I am Robin, Robin Smith, self-sufficient farmer and rocket hobbyist from rural New Jersey. Do you mind me asking, what's a famous pop singer doing on You're Going to Mars? She squints at me, like she's trying to determine whether she can tell me the truth. I guess I pass her brief intoxicated test because she leans in and lowers her voice. My agent says it's the perfect promo. She peers around at the cameras, not pointed at us at the moment, whispers, I'm not supposed to win. Just make it far enough to promote the launch. She chuckles at her own pun. Get it? Launch of my next album, Rocket Girl. But really? My secret reason? She whispers even more softly into my ear. I wanted to escape. Huh. This girl on top of the world, with freedoms I could only dream of, wants to escape. Escape what? My look of shock must be obvious because she shakes her head, trying to focus. Wow, still drunk, loose lips. You didn't hear any of that, promise me. And you have to tell me something now so we're even, a secret. Not a word, promise. I look around too as if all eyes are on us. But everyone's busy either gawking out the windows or clutching their stomachs and floating around looking for a bag or something to barf in. Can I trust this person? It's likely she won't even remember any of this. I could make up any secret I want. But there's something about her. She's revealed herself to me almost immediately. She deserves the same. You're not the only one, Aurora. I also needed to escape. Alert! Alert! Malfunction! Prepare for emergency action! We spin around to flashing red lights and a blaring siren. Panic spreads like fire in the open cabin as the weightless bodies of the contestants bounce off each other, limbs reaching and writhing and grabbing, everyone looking for something to hold on to, something safe in the chaos. Claire screams at the top of her lungs and clutches poor Albert, who tries in vain to pry her loose. A man, Tanner, is smushing another woman's face, I think her name is Avery, against a window with his foot in an effort to push himself down to a safety harness. Several contestants are launching themselves toward Ted and the production crew, as if a bunch of cameramen could save them from a fiery death 100 miles above Earth. Aurora and I hold on to the bar beneath our window. I notice her body shaking, and she has her head tucked into her chest like she's praying. She's afraid. I put my arm around her. Aurora, take a deep breath. Look over at Ted and the crew. She tentatively peeks at them. Why? They're going to die too. No. Notice how they're pretty calm, how they're still shooting, panning with the cameras. And that one next to Ted, he's holding back a smile. It's a little too perfect, don't you think? Confirming my theory, thank God, the alarm stops and the lights return to normal. Aurora's body instantly relaxes, and she lets out a little snicker. Sneaky, sneaky. An announcement comes from unseen speakers. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. My co-pilot must have accidentally pushed the wrong button up here in the cockpit. I apologize and want to assure you everything's just absolutely fine. We'll be re-entering gravity in a few seconds, so if you could now find your seats and buckle in, thank you. The entire cabin seems to exhale as bodies float gently to the floor and nervous chuckles fill the space. We aren't going to die after all. Aurora buckles in and turns to me. Pretty observant. If that was a test, you passed for not losing your cool. And you passed for not losing your cookies. She laughs. Well, then I guess we're even. It appears she's already forgotten our little secrets thing. Good. We look around and it dawns on everyone that it all was a test, our first test. Several of the contestants whimper to themselves, three or four openly crying. One of the crew hands out towels for us to wipe ourselves off, and some kind of automatic vacuum scurries around, sucking up any waste that remains. As Martha touches down a few minutes later, again with that most amazing light touch, Aurora spies a camera trained on her. She unbuckles and shoots up standing, raising both hands in the air, tossing her head back and forth for maximum hair flip, and squeals, "Let's do that again!" And Marina Della Costa throws up on her shoe.